when you're in a situation where you are, it is a business opportunity, that you smell a business opportunity, ask yourself, how am I helpful to this person or organization? What am I bringing to the table? Not so much what can I take from the table.
That's Ben Holst. I'm Steve Cleveland. This is Sync Club. So hey, Ben, welcome to the club.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, so I guess it's always good to start with like a little background. So what got you started in music?
I always played. My dad is a fantastic singer, songwriter, poet, and fingerstyle guitar player. So I was sort of born into it. But the short answer is it's all I really ever wanted to do. And I went to college. I started as a music major, but realized that I would actually get out of school faster if I changed my degree to advertising. So in an effort to get out of college faster so I could play music professionally quicker, I got an advertising degree. So basically, not long after I graduated from school, started making music for some of my advertising buddies.
Gotcha.
And that was sort of the beginning of the sort of melding of the worlds.
Yeah, so it sounds like you kind of knew that you wanted to compose and produce music.
Yeah. I think I was one, you know, I had some, like, there was a point in high school when I thought, okay, I'm going to, I was really into speaking Spanish and studied it through eighth grade. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to move to Spain and become like an international marketing manager for like Coca-Cola. That was my pipe dream for a while. So skip town, get out of the country and do that. I was always steered towards sales and sort of extroverted, you know, career paths.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, I always played, and I did. I'm kind of lucky in that I had the family support to do whatever I wanted. You know, they were willing. I wasn't really hardly supposed to graduate from high school. I got out by the skin of my teeth. So my parents were like, "Look, whatever happens is going to be great. Just don't go to jail and right. don't screw it up." I don't know. I'm lucky in that my parents had very managed expectations of how I was going to end up. So I had a very flexible, I could succeed in any way and they were going to be happy as long as I was just doing it successfully.
Yeah, you know, so, keeping it honest, right?
yeah, really.
Hey, so could I go back just a second ago? You mentioned that you were kind of geared towards extroverted activities. Is that something that helped you along your path, pitching your music, that kind of thing?
No, it's 100% has become an asset that I've learned to lean into. And, you know, through great encouragement from people along the way, I think the ability to bridge that gap between sort of your business-minded box and the fluidity of a career in music, to kind of be able to teeter the line between both of those has been probably one of my best wins along the way.
You mentioned that, you know, you wanted to get out of college as quick as possible so that you could play music. Is that something that you're pursuing as well as an artist?
Yeah, I have always sort of tried to balance and manage a pie piece or a pie that is sort of performance based. So I play in groups. I consistently try to be on stage and keep the original sort of goal nurtured. At least keep my chops up and pick up gigs with the right opportunities. I love producing and sort of being in service to artists and organizations that need things recorded. And then I do, of course, just really enjoy creating anything, you know, original. So I like to consider myself as an artist, although I have yet to produce anything and sort of release anything under my own name. Most of my work has, you know, been in TV and film and sort of the behind the scenesy kind of stuff.
You kind of have the dream job because it's like a lot of people never get a chance to do what they love. And it seems like you're doing it. So
I do have to kind of pinch myself. In fact, I, I was jogging with a friend and a longtime collaborator this morning, and we were both kind of discussing how hard it is to sort of see your own wins, especially in a day and age of like just gawking at people online, you know? So like I can play a fantastic gig and be in a wonderful experience and actually feel good about myself. And the next thing I know, I'm swiping on Instagram and, oh, there's a friend of mine who sold out a stadium.
Right.
And it's really disorienting and hard to gauge your own wins a lot of times in comparison to others.
It's an interesting thing because it's like, you know, as you grow and as a professional, at least for me, I start to meet folks that are doing amazing things. And I thought I was like doing great because, you know, I got some likes on my song that I, you know, or something crazy. So, I don't think you have to sell out an arena to have success.
No, you certainly don't have to do it to change lives.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, that's a good way to put it. So, you kind of touched on it, but at what point did you go, hey, I'm going to pursue these opportunities with ad agencies and I'm going to build relationships?
I think for me, and it's such a pain, right? I think my career path has been sort of managing both internal and external validation. And I feel like if I look back, usually you start with the internal validation of like, hey, I just played the guitar. I'm 9 years old. I thought that sounded pretty cool. And you go and you go, hey, mom, I just played this for the first time. I thought it sounded cool. Did you think it sounded cool? And mom goes, yeah, that's really cool. So then all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, let's keep going. And then you take that and you just keep expanding on it. So it's like, oh, hey, neighbor buddy, you play guitar. Let's play guitar together. Mm-hmm. We think we sound pretty good. And then, you know, let's play for some girls. Mm-hmm. Oh, all of a sudden, the girls think we sound pretty good too. So now there's four of us.
Yeah, that's...
And it's so...
Building your network right there.
Well, and building your network and building like these little wins for yourself. Confidence. Building momentum, building confidence. But also checking yourself against the marketplace, right? So It's not either just an inflated sense of self. You present yourself to the marketplace. You don't, you know, you're not going to be the victim of it either way, but you look for these, you know, validations or encouragements that reinforce what you already believe is good or sounds good, feels good, whatever.
Sure.
So fast forward through college, and here I am getting an advertising degree. I'm learning the linguistics, really, of this micro industry. Part of the whole reason I chose advertising is because at that point, University of Georgia did not have a music business degree. So I basically built one for myself without telling anyone. And so it's like, I can take this, I can apply it to any industry. It's not an MBA, it's not a business degree. It's almost, I don't know. To me, it sort of was more flexible even than that.
It's kind of cool that you learned something like I mean, I'm just kind of set back because that's something I never even considered. And I'm seeing like, wow, you know, the insight that you must have, it's just remarkable.
Advertising to me was basically a business degree in linguistics and not spreadsheets.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned how to write the most powerful sentence that I possibly could, which essentially was like writing the best song lyric. You know, you can put, I could give you a taste, a feeling, and an emotion and an affinity towards a brand in two sentences without having to write you a paragraph, right? So that's like the game that you play in advertising. It's the game you play as a songwriter.
Sure.
And so it was that was always kind of fascinating to me, and it was just a easier, being in the abstract of advertising was actually always easier for me to comprehend than like the binary. I think everyone has their Achilles heels, you know, and there's times to sort of lean into them, and I think there's times to just completely avoid them without hesitation, because why bother?
Mm-hmm. For sure. So, you know, like looking at your website, you've got like a fairly unique set of folks working with you. you know, how do you guys work, and how do you find business, or does business find you?
It depends. I think, you know, probably in the past couple of years, we have transitioned a little bit into the phone, more inbound phone calls, but we're still very much actively making outbound contacts and connections. My partner, two partners, Jeremy Gilbertson and Jason Shannon, and Jeremy and I grew up together in Connecticut. And he was the drummer in my first band.
Nice.
Let me say I was the guitar player in his first band, because he's a year ahead of me.
Okay.
And
okay.
when I was in eighth grade and they were freshmen, I got recruited to play guitar. And we've been pals ever since. And in about 2008, he was extremely encouraging to me to get more organized, get more aggressive, and get a little more proactive with the business that I'd kind of sort of just fallen into out of college.
Mm-hmm. And what's the business name, if you don't mind?
Oh yeah. Our company is Tune Welder Music Group, LLC. We kind of loosely go by Tune Welders.
Tune Welders. Okay.
Yeah. We've been formalized since 2008. So we are into our 11th year as a business marriage and an LLC here. Which I'm really proud of, to be able to have both the friendship and business partners work so well. It's a really lucky place to be.
For sure. It's always you're very, very fortunate to be able to work with the people that you also get along with. Obviously, developing your business was something that took a long time. Do you have any advice for somebody who's trying to get into this kind of space where they're writing music for Sync, or they're trying to? How do you network? How do you find folks that are willing to listen to your music? Because, I mean, a lot of people don't even want to hear your music, you know, at all.
Oh, yeah. Nobody does. In fact, I don't. I don't know a lot of people who just really want to listen to music that has not found a home yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are fans, but it's just really hard. I hit a point like a couple years ago where I'm looking at like all the CDs that I have, you know, and just music. And I can't tell, like every day someone's going, hey, you got to listen to this podcast. You got to read this book. Have you heard this record yet? And I'm like, I'm 42 years old. I will actually never, if I sat down to listen to everything I possibly need to listen to, I will not have enough time.
For sure.
Period. And it's sad, it's kind of frustrating, but it's also like you then start to understand like, oh, wow, I'm asking somebody for four or however many non-refundable minutes of their life to investigate me and whomever in any situation. It's a tall ask, even if it seems insignificant.
Right.
So, to answer your question, I think in one sort of flip I could give, this is probably the best advice I could give. When you're in a situation where you are, it is a business opportunity, that you smell a business opportunity, ask yourself, how am I helpful to this person or organization? What am I bringing to the table? Not so much what can I take from the table.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a subtle shift in concept when you're going into sort of a business relationship, that if you approach it as in, I need something, what can I take, whether it's a check or a license or an opportunity, that is naturally just going to psychologically put people in a defensive place.
Yeah.
Of they're now protecting their asset, whether it's their budget for their project or the time that it's going to take to do the deal or whatever it is. They're protecting, you know, something. I just try to, I just simply go into a meeting or in a situation going, where can I identify a place for me to be helpful? And there might be no place. There might be 10 different places that make sense. There might be 4 places for me to be helpful and 3 places for somebody I know really well to be twice as helpful as me, like whatever it is. That's what I'm identifying. Hopefully there's a musical opportunity for me to be helpful, but there isn't always necessarily that. There's not always a custom composition at the end of the line or a sync or something. But
right.
I think it's just identifying helpfulness and making sure you're the right fit.
Right. So, okay. So here's the last thing I'd like to talk to you about. Your bio mentions that you're an advocate for the Georgia Innocence Project. Would you like to talk about their mission a little bit?
I was working with a songwriter named Melanie Hammett years ago, and she started volunteering for the Georgia Innocence Project. And through her experience, she got to meet a gentleman by the name of Clarence Harrison, who was the first exoneree of the Georgia Innocence Project. Melanie had this idea that she wanted to write one song about him, about the experience, for the Georgia Innocence Project to use and leverage as a fundraising tool. Put it into media, get it out on social, you know, just as a something to do. And she came to me and wanted to sort of do a proof of concept. And I was basically like, well, the only way we can prove that we can do this is to do this. So let's decide a couple days, let's call in some favors, make a banging song that we can use as a social impact piece. Mm-hmm. And let's see what happens. No strings attached. Let's just do this thing. Through that experience and meeting Clarence, everything that the Georgia Innocence Project was doing and the people involved really kind of got under my skin. And what started out as one song quickly turned into Melanie going off into the woods for a weekend and writing like a whole story arc about Clarence's life, all kind of derived from interviews that she had done with him. And she took these interviews and basically, in his own words, tried to tell his story through song.
Okay.
So the net result of all this was basically an album's worth of material that we used to do performances and raise funds for the George Innocence Project. So we rehearsed with Clarence, and it was kind of like a songwriter in the round kind of thing, where Clarence would tell some stories about the songs. We would play the songs. We would just talk about them. And it was like an entertainment sort of fundraising wing that we developed for the Innocence Project. And we ended up, you know, speaking of sync, we ended up through a bunch of mutual relationships through CNN, which is based out of Atlanta here. We ended up getting a sync deal for a song for a CNN promo. They used the song for Death Row Stories, I think.
Okay.
Yep. It was a CNN series. And they used the song for a promo. So we ended up getting this fantastic placement. We took the money from the sink and we gave the majority of it to the Georgia Innocence Project and, you know, put a little in our pocket for the time that it took us to produce the song and kind of recoup some of that investment. And that was just a really powerful experience.
That's a wonderful use of talent. And that's something that I hope everybody can really appreciate. It's really beautiful that you guys have done that.
Thank you.
Well, you know, Ben, thank you for taking the time, and you're doing cool things, man. I wish you continued success.
Well, thanks so much, and let's absolutely stay in touch, because it's a lot of fun to kind of talk through all this stuff and figure out what it all means.
This is Steve Cleveland, and you've been listening to Sync Club. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you check out the show notes, where you can find additional information and links regarding our guest. Hey, let us know what you'd like to hear about. You can do so by hitting us up at Twitter, username Sync Club Podcast. Hey, thanks for the hang. We'll see you here next week at the club.